Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about camping to begin the show today with our first guest, Kevin Rebelinski. He is a freelance writer, photographer, writes about mainly about travel, beer, food, and the outdoors, and he is the author of 16 books. So it's going to be fun talking with him about camping, and I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about maybe choosing a campsite, or maybe sort of the ins and outs of camping? Maybe you've got a great camping experience to share. Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Kevin Rebelinski, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, great to be on again.
Have you been a camper pretty much all your life, or something later?
We've always gone camping every year since I was a teenager. But that was always sort of very recreational, very light. You know, sometimes a friend would bring a camper trailer with them. I can remember camping in the backyard when I was a kid, you know, big canvas tent that was probably more for ice fishing, you know, nothing on the bottom, just lay on the grass. And then as I got older, it just really became part of my routine, you know, recreationally. Annual camping trips with friends, usually involving a canoe as well. But that break that I need.
Yeah, I was thinking back to my time. Just as a kid, going over to my friend's place, lived in a farming community, and we'd go up on this hill, and we didn't have a tent or anything. We'd just take a couple of blankets and a pillow, and we'd spend the night as kids, and you know, looking at the stars. And so I got started. I don't know if you'd even call that camping, but it was at least spending time outdoors.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, we've always often used the tent, but, you know, there are people now who sleep in hammocks. And I do recall a time once when we were on the Wisconsin River on the sandbar camping, you know, and we didn't use a tent that night because there were no mosquitoes. It seems highly unlikely that there's ever a time when there's no mosquitoes, but we were able to sleep outside the entire night, and it was great.
So, and you don't really need a tent always, as you say. Maybe talk about the different options.
Oh, well, certainly there's, you know, the trailer that people pull along, or the big RV options, but the pop-up tents. We personally keep a three-person tent because it almost fits two people, which I've never been able to figure out. sleeping pads just outdoors around the fire. I don't know how common that is here in Wisconsin simply because of the mosquito issue, but I know some people have managed to work that out. These modern, hammocks, you know, people camping in a hammock. So it takes all sorts, I guess. and even tents, you've got the kind that you can stand up in. It's a big family tent, and, you know, separated in sections. I've seen, you know, screened in almost like a porch. But we just keep something simple, but not the alpine tents that are low to the ground to avoid being blown off a mountain, you know, where you can crawl into it almost like it's a small tunnel. So, depends on what you're comfortable with, I guess.
I think the first tent, the large tent, when I was first married, I got a 9x18
tent.
And I
what
would take
fighting?
That. Yeah, I mean, finding a spot for it. 9x16, sorry. And it was, if I went alone, it'd be sleeping on one end. It looked like I'd look down and it looked like a bowling alley. It felt a little bit like it. But I was always doing a lot of fishing, and I always had a lot of junk and stuff. And so I, you know, put most of it inside, and it served me for a long, long time. Then I loaned it to somebody, and he didn't bring it back right away, and the mice got into it. and man. Chewed it up. So I lost it. But I have a lot of really fun memories. I never used it for hike-ins. And maybe talk about hike-ins. What is a hike-in site and what is it like?
Well, if we're talking state parks, the hike-in sites are generally a short to very long walk into a campsite that is already designated. A place like Newport State Park has some that are over a mile in. So you have to, you know, hump your junk all the way to the campsite. And they do have, in that case, they do have like an outdoor toilet there that's shared by, I think, two campsites in that case. But then there's other parks that have, I'm trying to think here, Governor Dodge, for example. You don't go quite that far in, but again, you're carrying your stuff there and you're far from other campers. And depending on the state park, sometimes you're kind of close to people. So this gives you an opportunity to feel like you're in the deep woods without actually being too far from help if you need it, or your car if you need something that you forgot. So.
Yeah,
last summer we did, or last fall I did it in Buckhorn State Park, and they had two campsites on a little peninsula. The rest of them are often blocks, in circles around the rest of the state park. But there were these two that were by the water, and about maybe 150 feet from the parking area, so you really weren't that far, but you felt like you were. And in the state parks like that one, and also Rock Island State Park, where the campground is far from the ferry, they provide a cart. So at least you can put all your gear in there. You don't have to be self-sufficient as though you're trekking the Appalachian Trail. You can actually bring extra things, a cooler, load it into that cart, and then wheel it back into the woods.
What about, let's say, less experienced or maybe new campers trying it out? Staying closer to home a good idea or option for the less experienced? Or do you think it makes any difference?
And, there's so many state parks and county parks and city parks. It's pretty easy to find something close to home. Depending on availability, and that's another topic we should probably discuss.
Yeah, we got to get to that.
But the great thing about, we call it car camping. You're not camping in your car, but your car is very close by. So you can overpack if that's your option. If you choose to, you can have everything you want in the car, that's easier. Just throw it in the car. You don't have to think about, I'm carrying this many pounds of gear, so I can't really add that extra pair of socks. those little decisions where you're like, oh boy, is this too much stuff? And you shouldn't overpack anyways if you're going with the car. You are going to camp, so don't bring your entire living room. And people bring all sorts of stuff with them. But it is comforting for a first-time camper to be able to say, if this goes badly, if it storms really badly and all my stuff is wet, I can always just get right in the car. It's right here and go somewhere else.
Yeah. Or the black flies or the mosquitoes.
Or the black flies or the mosquitoes.
Black flies are the worst, I think.
Yeah, I fortunately don't come across them too much. I guess maybe my camping isn't far enough north sometimes, but they are unpleasant.
Kevin Revelinsky, our guest today, talking camping with him and maybe camping for the first time. Join him. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. If you got a camping experience or maybe a camping tip, I hope you'll join in. Again, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. You mentioned reservations, and most camping sites need reservations anymore. About scheduling them and so forth.
Okay, so they've got a new online system. They had a different provider before, and now it's wisconsin.goingtocamp.com. And I like this one better. The fee is maybe $2 cheaper, but you can look at a region to see where campsites are available. And that's kind of nice if you're not picky about the park. But otherwise, if you're looking to go to, say, a busy place like Devil's Lake, you have to kind of dig through the calendar to find a date where you're going to find a site. And when you put in your dates of, you know, if you 3-day weekend, you put in the dates of those, it will show you a site that's available the whole weekend, but it'll also show you a site that maybe is open for 2 nights or 1 night. So we've negotiated that and sometimes where it's like, well, I really want to be at that park, but this, you know, it seems to be full up, but then you are able to piece together that, well, Friday's available at site this one and, you know, Saturday and Sunday at this other one. Not always convenient, but with the sudden interest in camping, sometimes the parks are filling up. Well, often they're filling up, and those reservations are critical. I think there are still sites. I think they've returned to the ability to get same-day sites, like some that aren't on the reservation, but I think those are very few. And we've been able to get same-day reservations through the system. So that's also something that in previous systems you couldn't do. So,
yeah. Let's take some calls. Tree and Madison, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was just commenting on, like, a lot of times I want to take a vacation in the middle of summer, and there's nowhere to camp because they're all booked up. I heard that farmers are now eligible to host people who are wanting to camp on their property. Is there a website for that?
Ooh, unfortunately, this is the first I've heard of that, though I can't say it surprises me. I think it's a great idea. I'm sorry I can't help you on that particular topic, but thanks for sharing that idea. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, maybe somebody listening in will have some information on that. Hey, if you do, give us a call or email us and let us know.
Something else
I don't
to
know
consider.
About it either.
Yeah, it's something else to consider. As she said, these parks are filling up. A lot of the national forest sites don't. I imagine that's starting to get stretched as well. But in Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, there are small campgrounds that have maybe 6 sites in a circle and a pit toilet and a water pump. And, you know, I've always had good luck with those, like Chipmunk Rapids over towards Florence on Highway 70. Places like that where you go down a dirt road and it just seems like nobody ever finds those places. I've been able to camp at that particular site, and now I'm ruining it for myself, but at that particular site on 4th of July, just pulling in and there's one person there. So that might be something to consider. But as I said, with the popularity, people are, you know, they figure out a way to find a site, and these are probably starting to get full too.
Yeah. Kevin Revelinsky, our guest, as we talk camping with him, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. And we are talking camping here in the state of Wisconsin with our guest, Kevin Revelinsky, freelance writer and photographer. He's written 16 books, and he writes about a lot of things in the outdoors for sure. We have callers online. You can join in, too. I think there's an open line at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And you know what? I'm going to go to Heidi in Green Bay because she has some information, I believe, on the farmers' field camping. Heidi?
Yeah. Hi. So there's a membership program called Harvest Host, HARVEST HOSTS. And they have places where you can park it on a farm, orchards, wineries, golf courses. It's all across the country and some in Canada. This membership is, I think, roughly between $60 and $80 a year, and then you are able to park for free, usually one night, unless you are able to get consent from the owner to park longer. Usually no electricity, although some have it. It's lovely. The only request is that perhaps you patronize their business with a small purchase if they have a retail outlet of some kind, or a winery where you might purchase a bottle of wine or a brewery. So it's lovely. We're planning on one in August in upstate New York.
Wow, very cool.
Very cool.
Mentioning that reminds me of something I did hear about last year. A friend used called HipCamp.com. It's not exclusively farms or private land. I think it covers about everything, but I did see a lot of private places in there. And just quickly Googling right now, I see that there are some near the national forest or, near special places. And it can cost anywhere from 50 per night to, it goes up. So some of them are glamping, and some of them are public sites as opposed to private ones. But that might be another resource as well to consider.
So there we go. Harvest Hosts, as Heidi brought up, or as Kevin mentioned, hipcamp.com, another place to go. Heidi, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
That's
Bill
great
and
tip.
Spoon. Yeah, Bill and Spooner, let's go to you. Thanks for calling, Bill.
Hi, Larry. I always enjoy your show. I've got three quick tips, and one is in the same vein as Heidi's. It is a web app for your phone called All Stays, ALLSTAYS.com. And the application is a one-time purchase of around $10. But it may have the farm type stuff in it, but what it also has in is Bureau of Land Management and National Forest.
Wow.
So the dispersed camping at Chipmunk Hollow that your guest was talking about, you can see the availability and you can book them. We've gone to Bureau of Land Management, Army Corps of Engineer, and it also includes all private, state, local campgrounds. It's quite inclusive.
That's impressive.
The PC-based application doesn't seem to work as well, but the iPhone one works really well. Tip number two for your rotting tent problem, I have stored for more than 20 years now my double-walled nylon tents in onion bags, or potato bags, the big sacks that produce come in, and you can get them at the produce department. Just ask them for one next time they unload a 20-pound sack of onions or potatoes or something. They'll give you the sacks. And they work really great because they breathe and the tents don't get damp and musty in them. And tip number three, if you don't like bugs, mud, sand, and sunscreen and all that goes with it, camp in the winter. A bivouac sack and a good sleeping bag is really the only additional equipment you need from ice fishing. And once you consider January and February prime camping months, you'll wonder why you mess around doing it in July.
Oh, those are great tips, Bill.
Yeah, they are.
Don't you think, Kevin?
Yeah, those are great, and I'm not a fan of winter camping. I get cold so easily. I'm a little bit of a baby when it comes to that. But we did do fall camping last year. We went up to the Porcupines actually, and it went below freezing. But with a good sleeping bag and the tent to keep the wind off, we were just fine. So, then again, it's fall, so the bugs are mostly gone, except perhaps some very hardy ticks, but yeah.
I can remember winter camping in that 9x16 tent that I had with graduate students. I was a graduate student, and I forget how many of us went, but we were sort of all laid together in a row in my tent. I forgot how many people we got into it, but... it was really a fun experience, and we got out and did some skiing and crossed, we got the snowshoes out. It was a lot of fun. So
yeah, and the parks are open during that time. They might not plow the roads, some of them, but they do offer winter camping, almost all of them that I can think of.
Bill, thanks a lot. Good tips. And that first, allstays.com. Sounds like a good one to get. Thank you. You can trade in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Some great tips. Maybe you've got a camping experience to share. I've had good and bad experiences. I guess all of us have who've done a lot of it. But I'd love to hear those as well. Kurt in Mequon, it's your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I have a question for Kevin, and that is, what if I would like to throw in a sleeping bag and a few essentials in my SUV and head out to one of our great state parks? Do you like advocate any use for SUV camping in that manner?
An SUV.
So, in other words, to use that for the tent, is that what you mean, Kurt?
Yes, exactly. Are there screens possibly that you could put in for a window, keep the mosquitoes out or whatever, so you don't have to use a tent?
I've never done that, but I'm sure it would be possible. I know there's screen material that you can buy, but those outdoor, those gathering tents, they're just actually a mosquito, screen where you can get together with a group and play cards on a table, you know, those very big ones. I imagine you could rig that up, but, you know, I've never, this is an interesting idea, and God knows I've slept in my car before on road trips where we couldn't find a place to stay. So, I think that's a good option.
Yeah, I've done it. I've done it too on occasion. And where I was just going from one spot to another spot and overnight once and then off somewhere else. And I even had an air mattress that fit right in the back, and it worked just fine. And I just had some netting that I could tape right to the car window, and I had no problems at all.
The last time I remember camping in the car, we actually had our tent and were camping in it, but it was on the shore of Lake Superior up in the UP. It was a county park. I forget the name, but it was free camping. Just pull up, find a place, throw it down. And we did that, and it was a lovely, beautiful, clear night. Moon was up and all that, and we went to sleep in the tent. And in the middle of the night, it felt like somebody was attacking us. Like somebody was reaching under me in the tent and trying to roll us into a ball. And I thought, oh, my God, do we have a crazy out there? What's going on? And it was a storm that was coming in from Lake Superior. It had blown out all our tent stakes. I lost like two of them. They flew off in the wind when the tent flipped. And we had to get out and kind of pull all our gear together. And I held the tent as if it were a kite while my wife unloaded things and took them to the car. It was crazy. So we, and then the rain came. So Lake Superior was kind enough to wake us up before just, putting us under a downpour. But it was one of the more interesting camping experiences I've had.
Kurt, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I was camp in the Stevens Point Lake Arbutus.
Oh yeah,
campground there, where actually I caught the first legal muskie I ever caught. I caught there. This was many years ago, and a tornado came through. High winds and a tornado actually came through, and not far from where our tent was. And actually, we couldn't get back out because there were so many trees down for the road to get back out. It took a little while to get out of there. It was a very scary experience.
Yeah, for sure. And you hope that the park has, you know, one of the buildings that you can seek shelter in, because there isn't much else you can do.
Well, there wasn't much there, but we had the car nearby, and so we wound up in the car for part of that night, hoping and praying that we weren't going to be struck down. But it was, and the tornado was not far from, and it was a small, it was a great big one, but it took down a bunch of trees, and it was noisy.
Do you remember what year that was?
Oh, no, it's a long, long time. I was probably 18 year, 19, no, I think it was 21 years old, so, you know, that's a long time ago.
Maybe I seem 22. To remember. That was our when you asked me how early I started camping, that's where we would go, Lake Arbutus. It was we would go there for the day for the beach, but then as we got older, we'd go camp there. So that's near and dear to me.
Yeah, I and near and dear to me too. I still have the picture of me holding up that first legal muskie. I think it was 34 inches long or whatever, 35 inches that I caught on a topwater bait. And it was an experience I won't forget. That's for sure.
Well, that's great. Oh.
Well, let's see. Jim in St. Germain. Hi.
Hey, Larry. How you doing? Hey, I have an idea for the fellow with the SUV and the mosquitoes to keep bugs out.
Uh-huh.
Yep. If you take a piece of mosquito netting, just buy some bulk, cut it out just a little bigger than your window on the SUV or windows, then you take refrigerator magnets, any magnets you can get on Amazon, wherever, at the hardware store, and you just place it over the outside and magnet the mosquito netting on. And you will climb off with it up there once in a while. But anyway, and it's really easy to take up, put down.
Well, that's great.
I love that idea, Jim. Here's me with the duct tape.
but we got MacGyvers out there today. That's great.
I love it. Thank you very much. Well, let's see. Maggie in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. Many years ago, we took 5th and 6th graders from Milwaukee Public Schools camping to Mossy Lake. Tried to scare them about raccoons coming into the tent with their food and candy. So that's a tip. Don't keep food and candy in your tents. And, you know, we knew we weren't getting enough, so we convinced them that there were bear in the area. And the second night that we were there doing a tent check, one of the little girls starts crying, and I'm like, what's the matter? And she goes, I forgot about the bears, and I sprayed cotton candy perfume on me. So she was convinced, the sweet smell. So don't spray cotton candy perfume on you. Don't keep food in your tents. And you can solve it, in case you forget that, with bug spray on top of the cotton candy perfume.
There you go. Maggie, that's great. I've told this story once on the show, but I'm going to retell it just because it's a bear story. We were camping at Black Lake in northern Wisconsin, and we got there late and just sort of set everything out. It's a wonderful campsite, camp area. And I left the Igloo ice cooler out. I didn't put it back in the car, and we woke up in the night, and there was a very large black bear that had the Igloo ice cooler. It was sitting up, and it had its front paws over the top of the cooler, and it was chomping down, trying to get the thing open. Well, unfortunately for the bear, it was chewing on the side that had the hinges, and so it couldn't get it open. And then it finally swacked it, and it rolled several times, but didn't open. And then it walked over to the tent, and my friend was standing in this netting in the doorway, but there we still had the mosquito netting down. And the bear stood up, and the bear was, of the height to look him right in the eyes.
Yikes.
And at that moment, I got my knife out, and I was going to make a new door in the back of the tent if the bear came through the front. But he dropped down and went to the next camp where there were honeymooners on their honeymoon camping. And they had left all their food out on the picnic table next to their pup tent. And they woke up, and the bear was on top of the picnic table. So you can imagine looking out of your tent at something that must have looked 10 feet tall and proceeded to eat all their food that was on the table. And they were packing up. They told the story in the morning as they were packing up to get the heck out of there. Oh, yeah, well, that's my story. I promise I will never tell it again on the air. I've told it twice. That'll be the second time, so I'm not going to do it again. But Maggie, you had a great story, too. Scott in New Berlin.
Yes, hi. I thought an alternative to having all that camping gear and whatnot is look for a guided backpacking trip. And we did one in 2019 out to Yosemite. And we're going to do the Sawtooth Mountains in Idaho this year. All you have to do is show up with the proper, you know, proper clothing, good shoes, and a water bottle, and they provide everything else. And they got a guide that does all the cooking, tells you where to, you know, they go on the trail, and they know where the campsites are. It's a lot more expensive, obviously, but you're not investing in all that gear. And secondly, when we get to Yosemite, there's all these permits you have to get, and there's a lottery and all that kind of stuff. Well, they took care of all that, so we could go when we wanted to, and not have to worry about, oh, we didn't get a permit this year. So just a tip for somebody that wants to think about it and doesn't want to have to invest in all that gear and don't know where to go and the whole bit.
You know, Scott, that's a great idea, Kevin.
Yeah, for sure. And especially if you're not experienced or you don't, you know, like you said, the hassles of the permits and the lotteries and getting all the gear to do something that you might not do often. You know, we obviously different gear if you're doing anything, you know, long range, you got to have lighter tents, lighter everything, in fact. So, and having a guide out in Yosemite, I don't think that's a bad thing.
I think that's a great idea, especially an area like that or an area you don't know the area. And a guide and can give you a great experience. Scott, well, call us back when you get back from that trip and let us know how it went. It sounded like your first one was good. We'll look forward to hearing from you. Thank you. Jeannie in Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hello. Hi. I just wanted to share a new tool we bought for camping, and that's a rechargeable 12-inch fan. So it provides not only air circulation if you want to car camp, but also mosquitoes won't come in against it if you put it out toward the window. So it's a handy tool to have whatever you're doing. Even in yard work, you can just set it next to you, and it keeps the mosquitoes away easily. And it keeps a charge for almost 24 hours.
Oh, wow. That's great. Useful.
That's great. Thank you.
It's on those hot summer nights when the air is not moving at all, it can get pretty stuffy in those tents, so that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, not a bad thing at all. And just relating to cars again, Elizabeth emailed, she did a quick search online, and there are several tents that are modified for SUVs as well. So kind of hook up to the SUV and... So here, we're learning some new things. Elizabeth, thanks for checking that out. Appreciate it.
One thing, and it's partly my own fault, but last fall when we were camping, we left the doors open on the SUV to move gear around. And we had turned off the dome light and all other things. But nevertheless, you have to be aware that sometimes some charge is being drawn from that battery, and we didn't use that SUV for about 3 days. And when we did, when it was time to leave, it wasn't going anywhere. So we had to find somebody to jump the cables. But again, I think my battery is also very old, but you know, there is that factor.
John in Belleville. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. Well, my comment is that, you know, last year they opened up all the camping and stuff for free for a while, and they just made a mess of it. And I think you need to tell these new people how to take care of their waste, how to carry it out that they carried in.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate part of civilization, there's a certain portion that just don't have an idea how to behave in certain situations. And certainly first time campers, I just can't imagine throwing something on the ground, not using a trash can. But that was a problem. And I think when they started to charge again, that kept some of those people out, I hope.
I was thinking about that Black Lake campground, Black Lake's about 150-acre lake, and there's this one campsite with, I don't know, that just around the lakes, there are no buildings or anything on the lake, so it's like you're in the middle of nowhere. And when people leave there, the people are there with rake, they bring a rake, they bring a broom, and they leave They leave those campsites. I mean, those campsites are left pristine. At least that's been my experience anytime I've ever been there. And I've really enjoyed that. And there's a bathroom there and so forth. So it's a great place to camp.
Are they sites right along the ring, or do you have to hike in a bit?
No, there you can kind of drive through the camp area. And then there are sites right along the water. All the sites are pretty much all the sites are right on the water. All that follow the lakeshore around part of the way. It's just a gorgeous little park, and it's not heavily used all the time. So Jim in Austin emailed that he took his son and his a few high school graduating buddies to canoe, fish, and camp in the Boundary Waters in 1999. They were coming off the day, and a storm came through, knocking down about 2 million plus trees. They lucked out. There were a few fatalities. And you know, what do you do during a massive storm miles from a secure protection?
I don't know. Find religion, I guess.
you pray. That's for sure. But for the most part, you know, we've talked about a few kind of strange experiences. But for the most part, camping is a lot of fun, and. By the way, just to go along with this, we've got a new blog out. It's called a new story on our blog. It's Pedal and Paddle. And I don't have the information right in front of me now, but if you go to our blog, there's a great story about ways you can pedal and paddle, places to go and where to see those places, and go to ideas at wpr.org/Larry and go to our blogs and you'll see that story. Kevin, it's always fun. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. Have me on again. I'm always around, so.
Well, we'll get you back for sure. I really appreciate it. Kevin Revolinsky, do you have a website, by the way?
I do. It's kevinrevolinsky.com or themadtraveler.com. They're two different sites. One's more to traveling. The other one's more for my author stuff. So all my books, my outdoor guidebooks, and my latest book, a collection of short stories.
Yeah.
All of it will be available there.
So give me the sites again.
KevinRevolinsky.com and TheMadTraveler.com, and they link to each other, so if you find one, you can find the other.
Well, we hope to find you again on the show. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks for having me on.
Kevin Revolinsky, take a look at his sites. He's a great writer and photographer as well, and his books are often thoughtful and are always thoughtful, and he's a very good writer. So you will enjoy him for sure. And I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy our next show coming up next. Have you ever been to Upham Woods Outdoor Learning Center near the Wisconsin Dells? I went there for the first time when I was in 4-H. I was a 4-H kid, so that was a long time ago. And so I'm kind of excited to hear some more about what's going on in Upham Woods, and we'll get that information next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.